Education is the key to success. Go to school, get a job, and live a good life. That is the African dream. And Jay, is it just me or someone lied to the masses? People are on these streets carrying their entire alphabet of degrees, and yet they are living hand to mouth. No one is questioning what are we learning, why are we learning it, what is education, and what is success. Let's not forget, there's also a growing number of people with special and varying needs who do not even have access to basic education. I have to ask, is education in Africa broken? My name is Teboho Khangotha III. Join me every week as I sit down with experts, educators, parents, and students to talk about the state of education on the African continent. It's a lot. Welcome to the Educated Africana.
And today we are yet going into an interesting topic. We are talking about nutrition. With me, I have Makeni and Thokozile, who are going to share their expertise, experiences on this topic, especially in connection to education in Africa. I'm going to let the ladies to just introduce themselves shortly, just to give us an idea of who are they, what are they going to tell us, not giving us too much for now, but just telling us a little bit about themselves. I can promise you that we have some experienced people today. Thokozile, can you just introduce yourself with a few sentences?
Thank you for having me on this podcast. My name is Thokozile Ngwenya. I live and reside in Lusaka, Zambia. I'm a mother of two children aged 7 and 9. And with that, you can understand that nutrition affects me on a daily basis as I prepare meals for our home, lunch boxes for the children to go to school, and for myself as I go to work. In addition, I am a writer for Nkwazi Magazine, which is a well-known, reputable magazine in Zambia that covers travel, tourism, as well as hotels. And my particular features have been restaurants in Zambia, as well as hotels and the menus they have to offer.
Wonderful. Makeni, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and how nutrition relates to you, especially in education in Africa?
I'm Makeni Zonneveld, a South African who now resides in the Netherlands. I'm an educator. That's how I define myself. Although I no longer stand in front of students, I still refer to myself as an educator because I'm a people developer. And I'm originally from South Africa, where I was actually a lecturer, a college lecturer standing in front of students. And education is still so much part of my passion that even now, even online, I still help students, you know, with maths, with career guidance. It's really in my blood. And when it comes to nutrition, I'm the only cook here. I live with my husband here, and I literally kicked him out of the kitchen because I love cooking, and I'm the one with all the in-depth knowledge on nutrition. And where did I get this in-depth knowledge from? From between 2006 and 2008, I went through 18 months of hell. I'll talk about that later. And at the end, I found 18 months later, in the middle of 2008, I found a solution in nutrition and canceled a very big operation. Since then, nutrition became my passion, and I studied more and more and more informally, and I share that information. That is what I do. And when you talk about nutrition in schools, it's something I'm very excited about, because we must catch them young. Prevention is better than cure.
Makeni, I'm with all the buzzwords, solution in nutrition, prevention is better than cure, you know what? And I can't wait just to dive into this. So ladies, when you hear the word nutrition, give me a word or a phrase that comes to mind. Togo.
When I hear the word nutrition, the words that come to mind is balanced diet.
Okay. Makeni, what comes to mind when you hear nutrition? You may have just said it, but I want to hear.
When I hear nutrition, I hear what I talk about all the time. It's all about health gain and not about weight loss. And also another thing that gives me the drive to talk about this every day is the way people are bombarded with information on social media on what healthy eating is. And that information is simply driven by profits. And my concern is it doesn't only cost people money, but it costs them their health, because most of the things that are called, touted as healthy, are actually just simply cancer factories.
Oh, so true. So let's get into it. For an everyday African, how do you answer the question, what is good nutrition? And considering the resources that are available to Africa, because it's so easy to Google and find all these beautiful ingredients, but many times you find that that is not what we have in Africa. I am in Zambia. I am from South Africa. I know, Makeni, you are from South Africa. Togozile, I know you are in Zambia. How, if we use these two countries that are African countries, what should I consider as nutrition that I have access to as an African? Makeni, I'll start with you.
Okay, thank you. Usually when I talk to people about nutrition, I say it's about what every foodstuff costs you. Like, you know, we know what drugs like marijuana cost the body, alcohol, nicotine, but most of the people don't know what everyday foodstuffs, like mainly the biggest enemy in the world is the S word, sugar. If people became aware of what sugar costs them and what sugar means, because it's not just the teaspoon of white stuff. Sugar is in so much that's given to children. Cereals, yogurt, all these things that we give to children, cookies, pizzas, pasta, that is all sugar. And I say to people, if you get that out of your diet, then more than half the battle is won. And then people say, what remains? I say vegetables and protein. And, you know, up to very recently, up to last year, I was one of the people who used to say, eat whole wheat bread. But now, since I really understand what wheat does, whether it's whole wheat or not, I say to people who can afford it, never touch wheat, even whole wheat. But if I'm talking to someone who cannot afford, who really cannot afford almond flour, I bake bread with almond flour. It's very expensive. Someone who cannot afford spelt, I say, then give your children whole wheat flour.
I'm so happy that you mentioned those ingredients, because I believe, or at least what I've noticed, is that many times that's what you hear about. You hear about the whole wheat, you hear about the almond flour, almond milk, and those are not easily accessible to me. Even as a person who is aware of their benefit.
Before you get to Tokozile, I said almond flour. Please, almond milk is something else. Dairy substitutes are something else. Meat substitutes are something else. Those are the things that are supposed to be healthy that are not healthy. So when I say I bake bread with almond flour, I don't mean drink almond milk, unless you're going to make almond milk. That's another story. But anything pre-prepared, anything with preservatives, anything from a tin or a packet or anything you buy ready-made, that is a cancer factory. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you for the clarification. I must have spoken a bit quick. I was making examples with almond flour. I've also heard of almond milk. I'm just putting them in that category of, I've heard of these things, but the access to them is like, where, how, even like in our day shops, our shop rights and whatever, it's not so easily accessible, especially in Zambia. So my additional question to Togozile was going to be, as a mom, especially of young children, like you had explained as you introduced yourself, what are your options that you go for, especially your basics, that you make sure that, you know, you were talking about packing lunch tins and making sure that their food is healthy, it's got proper nutrition. What do you look out for? What do you make sure that it's never missing in your children's lunch tin? Remember, we are also trying to encourage parents of children, especially school-going students. So Togozile, given where we are in Zambia, how do you go about that?
So first and foremost, I'd like to just emphasize that I think that being African is the greatest gift that God has given to us. By this, I mean that we have a very conducive climate, soil, environment. A lot of things grow in abundance naturally. And it's, I feel like sometimes with technology and how far we've developed, we like to complicate things. For me, I would want to say and emphasize that keeping it as natural as possible is easier for me, not only in complexity, but on the wallet. It's very expensive. Like, you know, these, as Makeni had mentioned, this social media bombarding, all these diets, we complicate things. What is in your backyard? What is at the market? What is in season? Because in Zambia, we have very simple seasons and there's always fresh vegetables and fresh fruits, tubers that are affordable to everybody and available to everyone. And they're just easily accessible. To answer your question, when packing for the children, I do mix and match here and there, but if there's something that is always in the lunchbox, it's a fruit, a natural fruit. For the sources of vitamin, for that natural sweetness to avoid, because children love sweets and they know the rule. I don't buy sweets in my house. I do occasionally when I receive gifts like chocolates and things like that, but I just don't buy sweets. Or an occasional treat is a chocolate here and there, yes. And so to sort of meet that craving and that desire, and so they're not feeling left out with their schoolmates, there's always a fruit. There's always protein as well, and a carb. It's a bit difficult with me with the vegetables because to keep that freshness, yes, you can use the foil. A fruit is always available.
As you were talking, I was just thinking of the daily five. You spoke about the protein and the different categories like that are needed, the vegetable, you know, that are needed in a balanced plate. And Makeni, that's where I want to take us. Now, you are talking to a busy parent who doesn't even know what you're talking about when you say nutrition, who goes for convenience and easy to give tuck shop money. My child gets a pie and a juice and maybe a packet of chips. What am I doing wrong? I know there's some, like the food is not healthy, but it's convenient. I don't have the time to make the actual food. I have three children. Waking up is a whole thing on its own. Going to bed is another thing on its own. And I'm giving these examples not to be extra, but these are the conversations that we are having, especially in the school environment, when you try and encourage parents to say, move away from the biscuits every day, move away from the tuck shop money every day. Now, if we're looking at the idea of balancing the pyramid, or some call it the daily five, how would you advise me? What should I check to make sure that those things are there? At least I'm willing, even if I'm busy, I'll pack it in the night. How would you advise me? What should I try? Beginner level.
Okay. Firstly, I'd like to really repeat some stuff that Tokozile says, because I think it's worth emphasizing. Tokozile, thank you. You said a fruit. That makes all the difference. A fruit. I'm an adult. I've got a bigger body than a kid, but I eat one fruit per day. A fruit. Thank you, Tokozile. Because we shouldn't bombard our children with a lot of fruit, because as Tokozile said, in Africa, these fruit and vegetables grow. At my age, at 70, I can tell you the difference between the fruit that were there when I was young and the fruit that we eat today. Everything is sweeter. It is not by accident. It is by design, because people are addicted to sugar. I once talked to someone here in the Netherlands who works for a company that develops these seeds and make things sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And I said to him, why do you make fruit and vegetable so sweet? He said, people want sugar, full stop. That's all he said. At least he's honest. He said, people want sugar. So in fact, it is even better to have no fruit other than too much fruit, because you get all the nutrients you would get out of a fruit, out of vegetables, and the vegetables themselves have become too sweet. So you get all the carbohydrates that you need from a meal from vegetables. So people think, okay, you need protein plus vegetables plus carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are in vegetables. So on your plate, you should not have protein, vegetables, and carbohydrates. In the beans, in the vegetables, all the vegetables, you already have carbohydrates. I want to go back to where I started with what to exclude. Tokozile said a fruit and did not mention fruit juice. That is what gets into many lunch boxes. My kids are now grown up. I think they are older than both of you, because they are 41 and 42. When they were small, I wanted to be a good parent. I said, no fizzy drinks. That part was good. But what did I do? I used to go to Makro every month and buy crates of 100 milliliter cartons of fruit juice. Because what's written on the carton? Pure fruit juice, no sugar added. Now, how many apples does it take to make that one carton? So Tokozile gives the child one apple. The parent who spends more money, like Makeni did, gives 100 milliliter, 8 apples into that small little body. So if you give your child and your family, everybody, yourself, the natural stuff, the vegetables, the beans, the white meat, the white fish. And if you can't afford almond flour, as I said, whole wheat bread, then you have subtracted a lot of cost, because poison is costly. Pre-prepared is costly. That's the poison. And meat replacements, those are poisons. Healthy food is not expensive. That is a myth that we need to kill.
I just want to reiterate on the juice part. I remember in South Africa, juice was actually banned in the school that I was working at, and children were only allowed to carry water. That was the only drink that was allowed. And it was a primary school. They were not allowed to go to tuck shop. However, we still have those parents who, you know, in this day and age, think are doing their best. Like you had made an example of yourself to say, you know, I bought the fruit juice because I was doing the best with the knowledge that I had. And that gave me an aha moment to say, well, yes, you know, to make one small box of juice. Actually, when you put it into perspective, if you were to squeeze out from an apple with your juicer or from any fruit with your juicer, you'd literally get a little cup like that of the juice from that natural fruit. So really, for me, I was like, huh, okay, yeah, it makes sense. So even me, as a teacher, as a mom, I just learned something. Also, another thing to reiterate is about carbohydrates. Like many parents, like many adults, I did think it can be a category on its own and has to be added on its own into the lunch tin or on the plate or whatever it is that you're presenting. But luckily today, my dear listeners, we are learning a lot. Many of our vegetables have that in them already. Now, I want us to talk about the culture of the adults in our communities, especially when it does come to nutrition. Education has a lot of stakeholders. It's the student, it's the teacher, it's the parent, and obviously the management of whatever school it is. However, the teacher and the parent are the biggest influencers. Now, in a classroom, a teacher can preach, give as many examples as possible, encourage, and do everything. But the culture at home has to match that encouragement. What I've picked up in Zambia is many people have backyard gardens. This is something that I'm not used to in South Africa. You would be surprised to find someone having a backyard garden. How do you think that has benefited the Zambian child, Thokozile, knowing and growing with that practice?
So I'll start by giving a little background about myself. We partially grew up on a farm. And if I wasn't at home, my grandparents were on a farm. And so I used to help my grandparents plant maize, go into the garden to get vegetables to cook with my grandmother or with my grandfather. And so what that did for me at a very young age was it started to instill in me a culture and a habit of appreciating from the soil. And when I was given the opportunity to travel, and I told my friends that I don't eat mangoes from the store because my grandmother used to smack my hands when I would take the mangoes when they were not yet ready from the tree. We were not allowed. So I don't eat those raw mangoes. And they told me they had never experienced plucking a mango from a tree or a guava. All they knew was it being bought in a store. And so what that has done for me growing up, and I didn't realize at that time, was to appreciate, first of all, the fruits of the soil. And even just that labor of love, that these things that people are doing now with this, instant that, it's not really natural, and it has consequences. And I'll always gravitate, even though I'm living in a smaller apartment now, we can't really have a garden, but I have a little corner with herbs. And when I don't have that, I'm going to my grandmother's house to pluck tomatoes and vegetables at her house because she lives maybe a few minutes away or so. But it's given me an appreciation for nature and how good it is for our bodies and how you can pour into it the love in your garden and it will reciprocate back to you. Rather than having the instant vegetables, the instant this and the instant that we have, that it does have consequences. And so I think it has affected me in growing up. I'm a person that doesn't eat without vegetables. I feel strange when there are no vegetables. It's just very odd to me. I'm always wanting vegetables because it's what I'm used to. I feel strange, whereas others feel strange when there's no meat. That too. So the habits have also gone towards my children, even though they have not always appreciated certain vegetables. I loathed beetroot growing up, and I thought my mother was punishing me by giving me beetroot. Now I love beetroot. I put it in a salad, I pickle it, and with time, instilling these habits, they do yield great results, so to say.
You know, I believe you lived on the flip side of how I lived. And I grew up to, not even grew up, as I, after getting married and I moved to Zambia, that's when I started appreciating exactly what you are talking about and how it does affect a child from such a young age. Like they say, show a child they'll do it, but just tell them it's as good as just talking to thin air or to a wall. If you are practicing it, they will practice that as well. Makeni, I don't know how you can bring a South African perspective, because us, we are not farmers. And I don't know how you raised your girls. What was the setup at home? Or what did you pick up maybe somewhere that led you to being the way that you are today? However, knowing how I grew up and how the South African locations, like we call them, are set up, that was not, what can I say, a normal practice to have the backyard garden. If you can just add a few on that one.
I'm so impressed. I didn't know, I only heard from you now, that in Zambia, there's this culture of vegetable patches. In South Africa, it's not common. And in South Africa, what we do, we pave the garden with a lot of money. Or if you can't afford paving, then they put cement on the whole garden, which is so wrong. So my background was, when I grew up, we didn't have a vegetable patch, but my mother was always talking about good nutrition. With the limited knowledge she had then about nutrition, we ate vegetables every day. And it was not the norm. The norm was to eat vegetables on Sunday. We ate vegetables every day. And my kids grew up like that, with vegetables every day. And I think it's a good thing to try and inculcate that culture in other countries outside Zambia, where this is not happening. And the last but one house that I had in South Africa, in fact, it was the last one, I had a vegetable patch. And one day I went to this big fruit and vegetable store that you know, that is in all the cities. And I went there and I bought tomatoes, and the young lady at the till, you know, just to do her work, to be kind, said, if you take 2 packets of tomatoes, you get lettuce free. And I said, no, I don't buy lettuce, because I lived alone then. And I had enough lettuce from the garden. I ate salad all the time. I said, because I've got enough lettuce in my garden. She said in isiZulu, "Iyamila." Now, you won't believe it, Thokozile. It means, does it grow? She was shocked. She works in this place that is so huge, that sells fruit and vegetable. And I said, where do you think all this stuff comes from? She said, I don't know. It gets delivered by a truck. So she thought fruit and vegetables come from a factory. That's how bad things are. That this girl from Soweto, 20 years old, did not know that lettuce grows. So it's about time we change that. It's really about time we change that, because many people in South Africa have yards where you can have a vegetable patch. At the moment, I don't have a vegetable patch, because where we live, you know, the Netherlands is tulip land. We live in a place where they used to plant tulips, and the soil, you know, all the pesticides that they use, the soil is not great. And the amount of vegetables that the two of us consume on a daily basis is so much that a vegetable patch would not suffice. That is my reason. I buy frozen vegetables. Because frozen, when I talk to people, they say, no, Makeni, I eat fresh vegetables. What are fresh vegetables? Fresh vegetables are frozen vegetables, because they get frozen at source. And vegetables you know, better vegetables are vegetables you buy from the market in our areas, in townships, etc. Why? Because they don't have artificial means of keeping vegetables fresh, so-called fresh, for weeks that the supermarkets have. And vegetables get transported. Here, we eat stuff from South Africa, from Spain, from all over, gets harvested and transported, frozen, defrosted. And then when it sits pretty at the supermarket shelf, we call it fresh vegetables. They, every time you take an apple off a tree or any vegetable or fruit that you harvest, starts losing nutrients every minute, every day. So the vegetable patch thing, hands, thumbs up to the Zambians. Keep it up, guys.
Just going back to what Tokozile and Makeni are saying, you know, vegetables, you know, I don't know how many times I've heard the word vegetables. Vegetables, 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 dear listeners, that is where the hell is. Let's teach our children, let's teach our students, let's make them self-sufficient, and practice is what is going to work, not just preaching to them. Appreciate the soil. I think that's what we can all take from the Zambian communities. Appreciate the soil. When you work it, it will work for you. Take care of it, it will take care of you, essentially. Let it not be, again, our children discovers like us in their 30s and late 20s what eating healthy and how things can be grown and what could be done happens again. This is our time with our 3-year-old, 4-year-old. We know ourselves. Now, as we move on, unfortunately, Africa has a lot of poverty-stricken places and poverty-stricken schools that, you know, classes are in numbers. Children, parents are eager to know. They are eager to learn. However, resources are very, very, very limited, if we can say the least. These places, in my knowledge, I know for sure in South Africa, are usually subsidized by the government to hand over or give a meal a day to such children, such communities. And the meals are usually quite balanced, to say the least, especially with what is available. Now, sometimes having too much, when we look at poverty-stricken places and when we look at private school children, parents, and we compare the two, the amount nourishment may come from actually having a lot, having too many resources, having too much money, being too busy, supplementing what should be chewed and enjoyed with gummy vitamins and all sorts of things. Do you ladies think or wonder if we as African schools made a rule like the Japanese to say, everybody, all the schools get a meal from school? Are we going to be able to tackle all our children's nutrition necessities for a daily meal? Would that be something that works for us? Tokozile, what do you think?
Before I answer that, I wanted to highlight what Makeni spoke about when she touched on frozen vegetables. You know, for a long time, I must admit that I thought that because they're frozen, either their nutritional value goes down or that they are preservatives. And I just love that you touched on that. And it's something that's taken me time as well, you know, because you think one is better than the other because of A, B, C, D. But through knowledge and interaction, we are learning better. So thank you for that. Now, to answer your question, do I think that having a standardized provision of meals in schools is a good idea in Africa? Yes and no, if that helps. First of all, I want us to be realistic. We're struggling with education already and various other factors. Introducing, I wouldn't want to call it a burden, but for lack of using a better term right now, we are struggling with so much. I just don't know if our school systems, especially the government in Zambia, would be able to manage that. Now let's take that to the private schools. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think that it's something that could be explored if specialists in nutrition, these are experts, would take a lead in this. Because you look at what happens in the social settings right now, there's pressure sometimes. Children compare what is in their lunchbox with their peers. And this is not always a good thing. Other parents pack things that are more fast foody, others are more, and there's this competition and desire. So if this was led by the experts in nutrition and there was the financial capacity to do this, I think that would be good. It would bring uniformity in many other areas. And it for busy parents, I think you tackled busy parents in the beginning of this discussion. We would ensure that maybe all the food groups are met, whereas in day-to-day, you can skip, you can get busy, and just life's challenges that present itself. So yes, I hope that answers your question. It should be an idea that could be explored in the private sector. I think that in the public sector, we are not at that point right now. We're still tackling many other core issues.
Yeah, I understand that. And you know, in Zambia, there's so many, like you said, so many resources that the school system is lacking. Resources, stationery, even workforce, curriculum, all of that is also quite behind.
My answer is like Togozile, yes and no. But for me, the main thing is it starts with education. You said earlier, in education, there are different stakeholders. It starts with educating all the adults around the child, educating the parent. Togozile, I've agreed with you on everything except that as a treat you give a chocolate, we should educate parents so that they realize exactly what a chocolate is costing their child, exactly what sugar costs their child. You know, most of the kids that are on Ritalin should actually be off sugar instead of on Ritalin. They should be off sugar. If parents knew what caffeine and sugar costs their children, that would go a long way. So if parents could understand, you know, the emphasis is on what does this cost me and I exclude it. So whether it's in a lunchbox or sold at school or given for free at school, it's actually about what does it cost. I'll give you a quick example. Contrary to popular belief, there is poverty in Europe, in the US, in the UK. On TV here, the Minister of Education, I felt like crying. The Minister of Education was at a primary school launching a program at a school in a poor area. And there he sat on a little chair with the children. And what was on the table? Tons of fruit. Only fruit, tons of fruit. The kids had more than a banana each. The kids all got a juice bottle. I wanted to cry. So now, you mentioned something so important, Teboho. It, you know, most of the problems that we have today, chronic illnesses, are not caused by starvation. They are caused by the undernourishment of the poor, because all the junk that people eat, everything is nutrition deficient. And so that is what we give to our children. So just imagine this lunchbox of a parent who does not have money. Two slices of whole wheat bread. Don't tell me you can't afford whole wheat, because you can afford sweets. Two slices of whole wheat bread with either peanut butter or eggs, and peanut butter without sugar that is available, I make hazelnut and raisin paste. I don't buy it. I buy hazelnuts and with a blender, make it from scratch. So I don't expect parents, all parents, to afford that. But you can buy peanut butter that has no sugar. You can, because you must teach your children not to be addicted to sugar. And that, you know, if we had two more hours, I'll talk 50 times more about sugar. And then give your child a bottle that they can refill with water. Instead of buying, you know, at the schools here, what they say, yeah, because they talk about obesity. Obesity is not a condition. The condition is poor nutrition. We should address that. They talk about obesity and then they say at the schools, maybe it's an idea to stop getting cool drinks and juices from the dispensing machines and rather get bottled water. You know, I nearly cursed. We should not be dispensing bottles of bottled water at schools. The kids should be having reusable bottles that they take to the tap and drink for the whole day. So now what has this child got to eat? Whole wheat bread with peanut butter, whole wheat bread with cheese, no processed meats. Please, no polony, nothing processed, because processed foods cause cancer. So if we can teach our children to have that lunchbox, and another thing, educating parents, educating teachers, educating the authorities, and also educating the kids, because when I was that strict parent who bought juice, didn't allow my kids fizzy drinks and sweets, you know what I learned later? From them when they grew up, they used to swap their healthy lunchbox for a can of Coke and sweets at school and their fruit, because the other kids did not get fruit at home. So they appreciated getting a mandarin or an apple. So it's about education, education, education. And that is what I do.
You educate, Makeni, you educate. And today we are educated. Anyone who was listening to this does not walk away with one thing from Makeni, from Thokozile. Guys, I don't know what you were listening to, because honestly, my notebook is on page 5, trying to keep up with these ladies. And I just want to reiterate a few things that have been mentioned today. A fruit a day. Make sure we can do this. You know, I'm also encouraged. A fruit, water. One fruit, yeah, that's it. It does its part. Let's replace juice with water. Let's be mindful of what we are putting and what we are teaching our children. You can't be having the processed meat and the fizzy drinks and all the sorts, but you want your child to be drinking water because it's healthier. And I think one thing that also really caught me is, what does it cost you? What does it cost your health? One chocolate, what does it cost your health? And there's something that was touched on also about medicine, especially Ritalin and the likes for ADHD and things like that. And for me, I think I've heard it a few times here and there, but hearing that, you know, a child might only need to be taken away from sugar or reduce the amount of sugar instead of getting Ritalin, it made me think of so many cases of children that I have taught in my young career that are or were on Ritalin. And I thought, okay, this thing is not working. Little did I know, it may just be sugar. Ladies, I want to give you an opportunity to share with us where you are found. How can we continue the conversation with you? Where can people read about you? Whatever it is, I know you guys are on a few platforms. Togozile, please share with us, and after you give Makeni a turn to share with us, what other projects are you in that we can also involve ourselves in and start changing not only our own lives as adults, but also the children that we are influencing? Togozile.
I'm found on two main platforms, LinkedIn, Togozile Ngwenya, here in Lusaka, Zambia. My writings and for the magazine, for travel as well as restaurants and hotels and the experiences I have had there is found on Linktree, linktr.ee/Togozile Ngwenya, based here in Lusaka, Zambia.
Thank you so much, Togozile. We'll be sure to add those onto our episode. Makeni, please share with us, where can we find you? How can we follow your influence, guidance beyond this episode?
Thank you so much. I offer coaching to people face-to-face and virtually online. And I also, I'm busy finalizing a book on this subject. And as soon as it's ready, Africana women will be the first to know about that. And I've got a website for that, because my other websites are for the corporate work that I do, being a speaker, doing workshops, leadership, etc. But I have a website for this, because I'm called the coolest granny in town, because this coolest granny with so much energy is 70 years old, guys. You heard well, 70. 70 is the new 50, guys. And by 70 is the new 50, I don't mean looking glamorous. I mean feeling like $1 million. So you can contact me via one of my websites, makeni.com, or coolestgranny.online, not .com, coolestgranny.online, and let's have a conversation. You don't have to be my paying coaching client. If you can't pay for the coaching, let's just have a conversation, and you will be the first to hear about the book. I get interviewed on mass media all over, but I was so excited when I got invited to Africana Women, because the work that Chulu and you guys do really rocks. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Thank you so much, ladies. Your enthusiasm, your information, your knowledge, your experience, it does not go unnoticed. I know already there are so many lives that have been touched. There's so many individuals that are going to do something because of this episode, and I believe you are about to be asked a gazillion questions after this episode. I hope you are ready. Thank you so much for the time. I could have gone on. I think I have 5 more questions that I could have asked, because it was just coming in left, right, and center. But I do appreciate the time that you have taken to be with me on the Educated Africana. And those who don't know, Africana Woman is our big branch, our brain, and we are the brain child. We are just under Africana Woman, but we appreciate it so much that we are able to also infuse education, especially in the African lands. Everybody who's been listening, we appreciate you.
Be part of the solution. Talking is not enough. We need action. So I am challenging you today. What are you going to do about what you just heard? Tell us all about it on social media. Tag at Africana Woman or hashtag Educated Africana. The Educated Africana is part of the Africana Woman podcast network. Subscribe, review, and share this episode to help us keep the conversation going. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram at Africana Woman or hashtag Educated Africana. Catch you next week.